Alright, time for another draft. Physics.com. Debate physics also, but again, the debate is rather thin, and so what's at stake is, you know, the stakes are sort of gigantic. The idea that for 300 years, physics, you know, this revered science of the truth and hard facts and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they all telling us how the universe works and all the rest of this crap. You know, it's quite an arrogant science, frankly. That should be apparent to everybody, that they just keep saying we've got the most proven theory ever, the most proven blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it really isn't there. So they got that against them. And then you find out that, you know, they never really evidenced any of this stuff. They're just fanatics for a very narrow perspective, and you could just compare that, you know, to people of faith, you know, and how arrogant they are in their religious beliefs. And that's all you see here, and you see that it's made so obvious by even when you show them the counter evidence, you know, the truth starts to slide in. It's why maybe like the Dead Sea Scrolls, it kind of made it obvious that there was all this archaic old poetry, you know, about the Son and the Father and all this kind of crap, you know, that duplicated in a lot of way, you know, the Jesus story and made it all into kind of a mythology, you know, that they really were praying to totem poles and people didn't care, you know, so what? So, you know, so what? It seems like it's just storytelling. They just like the story. So, again, I really can't point out how, you know, this is such a simple argument. I guess maybe draw it first. I don't know. That, you know, really there shouldn't be much argument about it. You know, this should be like a fact. Oh, yeah, okay, there's no doubt about these facts. I mean, they're just, you know, it's so simple. There really shouldn't be much room for argument. All right, so we have a couple of experiments, a couple of ideas. Now, I've sort of demonstrated, I mean, this is called Hooke's Law, but basically it's this idea that you have a spring, okay, and you're going to put a weight on it. And the fact is, you know, you put twice as much weight. So if I put a one mass on it here, it stretches this much. You know, if I put a two mass on, it stretches twice as much, okay, just 2x. All right, kind of indicating something about the nature of things. Now, I've shown you can just make a lever, okay, with a fulcrum in the middle. And you can sort of just understand if I move the fulcrum, that is, I put a rock in different locations, I can change, you know, how the lever works. That is, I can take a big, giant motion that's pretty weak, and I can turn it into a small motion that's very strong. And I can use gears, do the same thing, okay? I can have a turning force, you know, where an object turns, and if I put I can put a heavy mass here, or I can put a light mass out here, and I can churn it, and it will feel like the same amount of work. This will leave with twice the velocity of this. Okay, and you know, there's just not much else that could possibly happen. And you know, it's really just about weight and momentum, and those two things are essentially the same thing. And I sort of demonstrated that just by dropping an object on a scale. And, you know, you can increase its weight by doing this four times the height thing. So you can double something's weight, all right? So something weighs a certain amount, one. I can make the one weigh two by lifting it four times higher, okay, and doubling its velocity. Doubling its momentum, okay, mv. So if I make the v twice as big, okay, the fact is I can double its weight, the outcome, what it'll add up to. I really can't see stuff down there. Gotta remember not to draw down there. So lots of ways to test it, lots of ways that sort of demonstrate it. And so I pointed out there's this Mythbusters experiment where they just, you know, take a hammer and swing it down. I was thinking about the hammer, you know, and, you know, there's all these little subtleties. So in that particular case, they had a big, giant piece of steel, okay, and then they take a pretty heavy, you know, it looks like a good 10 pounds of steel, and they swing it, you know, a hammer, and they have clay in here that gets squished, and they're just going to measure how much it, the impact is based on how much it squishes the clay. Now, they could have put a spring in here, you know, and just measured how much the spring compressed, all right, and gotten their answer that way. Now, it probably would have been better because it would have said more to more people. But regardless, they didn't do that. Even though they had the equipment and everything else, they didn't try different substances, which they really should have done. But anyway, so I was thinking about it, you know, and it, you know, if you hit, usually when you hit a, you know, this is supposed to be like 1,600 pounds of steel or something. You know, when you hit a lighter object into a heavier object, the fact is it often will bounce. You know, so if I take a light hammer and I bang it on a heavy anvil, the hammer basically just bounces back. You know, I get a lot of recoil. But the fact is, if I take a heavy enough hammer, I won't get any recoil because what I'll actually do is start bending the steel. Okay, so in this case, when the first hammer hits, it's actually probably getting fatter and fatter, this end of the steel. It's actually bending the steel. That's why it's not bouncing back, is that it's actually got enough energy to start moving the steel, you know, to start moving the molecules of the steel. And so this really is just about where the crushing point is. So, you know, in this experiment, it's like the car crash experiment. You know, you could have a car, another car crash into each other, and the cars are basically springs. And so it's basically whatever spring is more compressible is the spring the energy will go into. So if I have one spring that's really easy to compress, it's going to take more of the energy than the spring that isn't. And obviously if I put a third object in there that was even more compressible, then the springs won't compress at all, and the only thing it'll compress is the tissue paper or whatever you put in here to absorb the energy. So the energy always goes to the easiest thing, okay, to absorb the energy, whatever can bend or move or store, you know, compress and expand again. You know, there's storage devices and devices that just move, like the steel just moves, but that does use up the energy. So now the energy doesn't have to go this way because it moves steel that way. So whatever the easiest to move object is in any experiment is the stuff that's going to move. All right, so that's one of the experiments. The other ones are, you know, we're just testing the motion thing. We're going to use a rubber band or some other force to push something. And the idea is that if it weighs half as much, it's going to end up going twice as fast if I apply the same pressure or force. So I'm applying the same weight, pressure. And if the objects are capable of absorbing the energy, the fact is that, yes, you have every expectation that the momentum will be conserved. I mean, this is a concept in physics. It's Newton's third law, essentially. But you can't finagle momentum. You know, momentum has to be conserved. So if you're not getting these results, then something else has to be moving. You know, the steel has to be being crushed, or something else has to be moving if your objects aren't. If they don't have the momentum, momentum somewhere else in heat or in some other form of energy, but you have to conserve the momentum. So I guess I won't go into the Despard, you know, what he's gotten as a result of a little timing gate, but I mean they're kind of, you know, they're kind of all point in one direction, and the direction isn't good for the kinetic energy theory. So as stated, I mean, it's a 350-year-old theory. You know, they stuck the one half in it in the 1800s, but it's this mv squared idea, the squaring of the velocity. And it didn't have evidence 350 years ago. It doesn't have evidence now. You know, it's just not very well thought out, the implications of it. It turns simple objects like the lever into free energy devices by design. Because the fact is, you just put 100 joules of energy in this side in a heavy object, and you put a light object out here, and you'll get 200 out, or 400, or 800, or like the example of the gun and the bullet, okay, that completely violate Newton's third law. You've got 2,000 joules going out with the bullet, and only 2 joules going in the opposite direction with the gun. I mean, you know. Right there, you should be saying, well, that physics doesn't make any sense. It's violating the basic rules, the laws that we've established is pretty reliable. Maybe there's a problem here, right? I mean, Houston, we have a problem. This doesn't make any sense. It won't work in space because you won't be able to realize any of this energy, because if you did this in space, the bullet isn't going to turn your ship more, you know, than the gun going out the other side. It's the only thing that works in space is MV. 1/2 MV squared doesn't work. So a ton of evidence, really. I mean, these basic experiments have been done millions of times. Momentum is weight. It's just a fact. And weight is energy. It takes energy to lift weights. And that's the whole point. And the only thing that's fooling everybody is the fact that gravity is a proportional force. Okay, and it's a force dependent on time. How long you're in gravity decides how much gravity affects you. And the simple fact is you can put something 4 times higher, but that just means it's only in the gravity twice as long. Okay, you only get 2x of the amount of time of exposure to gravity, even though you went 4 times higher. Because the fact is you will increase the velocity, and as the velocity increases, you'll be traveling more distance, and you'll run out of distance. And so you're only going to have twice as long in the gravity, and you're only going to be having twice the collection of energy. I mean, these things are sort of obvious. And again, I've done the experiments. I've done the drop it from 4 times higher. It doubles the velocity. It's quite reliable, and that's all it does. You don't get 4 times the velocity. You only get twice the velocity. And when you get twice the velocity, you get twice the weight. And it adds up, because weight is momentum. All right, so that's the background. There is a, like I said, a lot at stake here. This, you know, so in some ways you could say, well, this is an outrageous accusation that science is full of liars and idiots. It's not my fault, but it seems apparent that this is true. Okay, because look at how fanatically they are defending physics that has no evidence, and that, you know, much of the evidence is pointing exactly against it, just saying you can't be this fucking stupid. I mean, again, the lever argument, you can sit there and have a lever going back and forth, oscillating. I mean, I did this experiment, I showed it, okay, and you have a one mass out here, and you have a two mass over here, right? Two mass on close to the fulcrum over here, one mass out here, and it oscillates perfectly. And there's nothing else to work here. There's the energy on this side has to create the energy on this side. The motion on one side creates the motion. It's up into gravity, stores the energy. The gravity throws the energy back in. There's no way there can be twice as much energy on one side of the lever than the other. And for thousands of years, people have been using levers to move things, to make things happen. And they can't have been free energy devices in disguise. And we never figured it out. We never made a free energy machine. You know, it just logically can't make any sense to people. And yet they have all this confidence. And it just, I mean, it just glaringly says, well, this is the problem, isn't it? People want to believe, like UFOs and different things, this stuff only survives because people want to believe it. And they don't really care about facts and the truth and evidence. And it's such hypocrisy, you know, because they will mock the fables of the flat earthers or the fables of the religious kooks, but their fables don't have any more integrity. And it's just a fact. All right, so I did request from the Ian Gosling guy some kind of reasoning to explain why the Mythbusters experiment is invalid, and he has provided something. But obviously it's not, you know, it's not really a good enough answer. All right, as the clay sample's length shortens on impact, it offers an increasing resistance. So anybody knows anything about clay knows is the more you manipulate it, the softer it gets, the easier to manipulate it gets. So the structure of clay isn't that it gets harder to manipulate as you put energy into it. As you put energy into it, it gets easier and easier for it to be manipulated or for you to move the pieces of the clay. So that's sort of idiotic on its face. It offers increasing resistance. I mean, so it's just a statement. Now there's, I don't think you'll find any experiment anywhere on Earth that'll demonstrate that clay offers more resistance as you increase its temperature, essentially. No chance. All right, as it becomes thinner and thinner, so it's like saying as you squeeze more toothpaste out of the tube or something, or you compress something between your hands, somehow it gets harder and harder to compress it as you start running out of stuff to compress. And again, it doesn't make any sense. What does that have to do with it? If I'm squeezing a bottle and squirting water out of it, it's not harder to push when I do the first liter or when I do the second liter. It's the same thing. It comes out of the end of the tube just as easily. So again, no evidence for any of this stuff. As it becomes thinner and thinner until it's metal on metal. Well, that's not in the example anywhere, so why are we even worried about that? There's no metal on metal part. There's just compressing clay. And the simple truth is that twice the velocity leads to twice the compression in the clay. Perfectly duplicating momentum is a correct answer. All right, it offers nonlinear resistance, so you say so. So you'll have zero evidence, zero experiments, zero links, zero anything to demonstrate that clay, okay, between two objects, or toothpaste, or a water balloon, or a spring, or anything, okay, offers more linear, is not linear. Okay, the evidence is that the springs are very linear. All right, and is a poor way of showing KE. Well, what's a good way of showing it? Show me the good experiments showing KE. Show me any experiments showing KE. 1/2 mv squared in action. Show me. And nobody's done that in 2 years. Hence why the episode wasn't about that. The episode wasn't about that because it wasn't about physics, frankly. It was about crashing cars to entertain morons. I mean, clearly they couldn't even figure out that 250 mile an hour cars colliding into each other does, in fact, equal one 100 mile an hour crash. They couldn't even figure that out. That it would be to somebody standing between the car, absorbing the impact, to a person absorbing the impact, getting hit by 250s is exactly the same as getting smashed by 1/100. Same thing, if the 1/100 is against a brick wall. So what the episode was about is just about how bad, you can say it's just such an obvious commentary on how simple-mindedness and how half-truths and how a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. It just makes that simple statement easy to realize, that these are people sort of interested in mechanics and engineering, and they can't even figure out this stuff that really should be pretty obvious to everybody. I mean, I can't believe people who... I really just, it's hard to even believe that these, that high school graduates can't figure this part out, that two springs will absorb the energy, both of them will absorb half the energy. And if you want to measure how much energy something has, you have to use one spring. Or you have to understand if I'm using two, that half the energy will be in each spring. I mean, not even be able to figure that out, pretty bad. All right, it takes 4 times the energy to compress a spring twice as far. So you have absolutely no experimental evidence demonstrating that to be true. So he can't link to anything. They just say this stuff. Jesus did this. Jesus did that. These are just stories, just mythology. It has no basis in reality. It takes 4 times more fuel to accelerate to twice the speed. Well, no evidence of it. nothing. They've had 350 years to produce some experimental evidence, and they have nothing. Okay. Nothing to do with Hooke's Law, which is about weight, not energy. Well, again, Hooke's Law is really so poorly named. I mean, it's not much of a law, frankly. You know, that scales and springs and levers, you know, move twice as much if you put twice as much velocity into them. Well, that's not much to figure out. But anyway, so, you know, this is his statement. This is his answer. So this thin pile of crap, and these are the same people that ridicule anyone who dares to pick at their revered experiments, and he just makes all of this crap up, doesn't have anything to back up any of these statements about how things work, just makes the shit up, okay, and, you know, and gets away with it. All right, well, this was a bit of a useless troll, you know, long-standing, you know, schizophrenic troll. Motherfucking piece of shit, you better block me. You're already blocked, retard. You know, I don't... Just too... Yeah, what the fuck? Anyway, people on Earth. Not a good thing. So this is apparently Parapologic, who apparently is some sort of, you know... He's irritating Stephen Bro, you know, which is good. As long as you're not trolling him. I mean, I'm not for trolling, but yes, asking him some questions or forcing him to, account for what his bold and idiotic assertions is perfectly reasonable. But I didn't find this very good. Anyway, it occurs to me that you could test the KE formula using a fixed gear on a bicycle drivetrain. Well, you can do it in so many simple ways. Again, I've pointed them out. You know, these are not complex experiments in the sense of, you know, even, I mean, well, you know, I guess I'll just diagram a couple of easy experiments that, you know, I think the lever already tells the tale. You don't need to go any further. It obviously can't be a free energy device, and KE says it is. It just overtly says it is. It does actually produce the conversion of the momentum, and the conversion of the momentum, that is, if you convert the gun with its two joules, its mass and its velocity, okay? So the gun moves, and you convert that MV into the bullet MV. You keep exactly the same momentum. By the kinetic energy rules, the bullet does in fact have 2,000 joules. So you've made energy. So all I have to do is drop the gun on one side of a lever, all right, and I can produce the free energy, the 2,000 joules. I drop 2 joules on one side, I get 2,000 joules on the other side. Yes, it requires a lot longer lever, 1,000 to 1 in terms of its dimensions, but it proves the point that they're saying levers are in fact free energy devices, that that's how the world works, and that, well, that's all we got to do is jump on one side of the lever and we can make free energy on the other side. And we can just keep using the piece of the free energy to keep moving the other side of the lever, and we can have perpetual motion and all that crap. It's the direct physical implication of their theory. I mean, you really don't need a complex experiment. But anyway, let's just go over a couple of the simple ones that have already been done. All right, so maybe we'll just read the comment first and then go to the drawing. Yeah, occurred to me that you could test the KE formula using a fixed gear on a bicycle drivetrain. According to KE theory, the cyclist would have to pedal 4 times harder, use 4 times the energy to turn the pedal crank 2x as fast. Well, that's part of the problem here, is that you have to have measuring devices that measure actual energy. And really can't do that. All we can do is measure masses and velocities. You know, ergo the problem. It should be relatively easy to rig up a test to measure energy input, and then it would just be a matter of counting the RPMs on the crank. Well, I'm just saying the lever, the already does that. You already see it in the oscillation of a lever. You know, any storage device, a lever with springs, a lever with using gravity, it doesn't matter. It already shows you the same thing. So I'm just saying it's kind of obvious that it really doesn't care. They don't care about the evidence. But anyway, bicycles are readily available since they're simple, well-made gear mechanisms. They have, yes, and, you know, they have a nice bearing. And the simple experiment would just be spinning it, right? So you just spin the wheel, and then you put a two mass half the distance from the center, and then you put a one mass twice the distance from the center. And the fact is they weigh the same. So technically, they'll slow the wheel down exactly the same amount. They'll produce just as much drag to you putting energy into the wheel and giving it velocity. But again, it's just a lever, you know, in a sense. All you've done is duplicated the same function of the lever. All right, anyway, should be possible to repurpose them for KE experiments. I already pointed it out. Yes, you could make a nice gear for a lever by just, you know, as Stephen Bro used the disc from a hard drive, you know, anything with a nice bearing, and just glue a stick on it. You know, yeah, so you could use the bearing from a wheel. The lever is already showing you a wheel, right? The fulcrum is already a wheel. And you're just saying, look, we're not doing the spinning around thing, we're just doing the turning thing. As that's all we need. We don't need the whole circular motion, we just need the turning part. Anyway, it should be possible to repurpose them for KE experiments in various ways. I think using them could significantly reduce the slop we see in a lot of KE experiments. So I think it just makes them sloppier, frankly, people are doing. Just wanted to share that thought. Yeah, I don't think it helps much. It's a bigger object, so bigger objects are good. So if you can use a big object, do the test, then when you're doing, if you're doing it by frames or by some other way to detect the motion, you know, by framing the motion, it makes some of that easier because it's moves slower, and the slower it moves, the easier it is to film and look at it frame by frame. So that's helpful. But again, it really doesn't, theoretically, it's not any better than the stuff that's been done. Theoretically. All right. So we will go to the drawing board. So, you know, we've already been over this, you know, a million times, but so the point is that I can take any spinning device, that is any kind of fulcrum, and like I said, you can use this to turn, you can just turn it, and the point is that this rotation and this rotation, this is twice the distance, so it ends up being twice the velocity. Okay, you're going to get here and you're going to get here at the same time, so this has to be twice the velocity as this is, and the fact is that it works out that way weight wise. This will weigh one, so if I have a let's say I have a two mass here and I have a two mass here, these two things will weigh the same. It'll balance. So if I put a one mass here, okay, twice the distance, that will balance. That will look like 2 pounds. Okay, so if this was 2 pounds, this will look just like 2 pounds. And I can make it look like I can have it out here, okay, 1/4 of the weight, and it'll look like, you know, 2 pounds. And I can put the bullet eventually all the way out here, and it'll weigh the same as the gun, okay, depending on how far out I put it because of this ratio. And the fact is that gravity's doing this to us all the time, okay? The heavy thing is absorbing more energy, all right? The more mass you have, the more energy it takes for gravity to move you. So you're moving at exactly the same speed in the gravity, the very light thing and the very heavy thing. Obviously, the heavy thing is collecting more gravity. That's why it makes a big hole when it hits the ground. Okay, the feather and the hammer don't hit the ground with the same energy, even though they moved at the same speed and by the same force. Well, it's obviously not the same force. The hammer obviously collected a lot more force. Yeah, obviously. So even if they drop at the same rate, it doesn't mean they have the same energy. All right, well, anyway. And vice versa is the simple argument. So I want to get to we'll just play Brozo's newest video and point out the, you know, it's just so bad and so stupid and it's so desperate, and you're just like, why is he so aggressive in defending something that the evidence is just keeps piling up against him, and he just keeps ignoring it and ignoring it. And you're just, what is this? It's just obvious fanaticism. All right, so there's some simple experiments you can do, right? And, you know, these are, the challenge was, is to just prove that the same force will produce the same momentum out. Same, you know, always momentum is conserved. So, you know, it's basically a law. All the physicists agree this is a fact. Now, they say it, like Professor Lewin, but then they'll do experiments where they actually don't conserve the momentum. And they'll say things that are just proof that they don't really appreciate the conservation of momentum, because they'll say things like a 5-ton train going 10 miles an hour has twice as much energy as a 10-ton train going 5 miles an hour, when that can't be possible. And it certainly doesn't conserve anything called momentum. If you're saying momentum isn't energy, then what the hell is momentum? And what the hell use is it? Why even use the word anymore if it doesn't mean anything relevant to energy? But anyway, so, you know, simple experiment. So I, at, you know, one point had to do the experiment because I keep saying this crap, and I'm saying that crap isn't true. So you have a simple idea that you just take a force. I used a rubber band, and you're going to take a two mass. So to duplicate a two mass, I use two objects that have the same one mass, okay, and you shoot them, and they have a velocity. All right, and then you take a one mass and do the same thing, okay. So half the mass, this is half the mass, right? Okay, and you end up with twice the velocity. Now, I got a number like, instead of 2, okay, instead of it being twice, it was 1.8. Okay, so yeah, some imperfections in the experiment, blah, 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 blah. Now, they claim to conserve kinetic energy, that is, to ignore momentum and conserve kinetic energy, this number has to be 1.4. So clearly not very close. Yeah, not close at all. So yes, that satisfied me, just to prove the point that what they're saying and the experiments they're doing are bullshit, because look, I did a simple experiment. I don't get any 1.4 number. I get a 1.8 number, and you know, it's pretty close to the 2.0. Anyway, and it just logically makes sense and it fits and all that crap. And the same is true for the lever. The lever is just doing the same thing. I mean, obviously, it's the point is you have the one mass here, you have the two mass here. All right, and the simple argument is when this two mass goes up in gravity, it's storing energy. And the fact is that stored energy, when it comes back down, has to be the energy, okay, that moves this one up. So this stored energy, okay, has to do the work on this side. And you can see it doing it, okay? It's just a fact that this is moving with twice the velocity that this moves. So the whole time you can watch this one move this much, you can watch this one move this much in the same exact time. So you know it's following this simple rule. The 2.0 is happening. And that all I have to do is make these objects fly off the lever. If I just stop the lever here at this middle point, just stop it. This object, if it's going this way, will leave with one velocity, and this object, okay, will leave with two. And that's just a fact. I mean, an irrefutable, undeniable, solid, rock-solid fact. But anyway, so Dispar did this experiment and a few others. So he got a timing gate. So the idea is now he has a reliable way, you know, of timing, you know, little, you know, photoelectric timing gate. So something goes through the timer and it measures how much time it blocks the beam. So he does numerous experiments with now bolts. Okay, so he has bolts, little metal bolts, and he has tape over them so they're a little bit more consistent. So he has, you know, one bolt and then he has two bolts stacked on top of each other. And the idea is to shoot them, okay, with a rubber band through a gate and let them fly and land. Now, I've already pointed out the flying and landing part is solid physics. You can't change that. The rate at which they fall is going to be identical. And so, you know, they basically have two components to their velocity. they'll have an acceleration down. Gravity will give them a new velocity down. And they have the original velocity you give them in this direction, and the two don't mix. And so basically they'll fall at exactly the same rate, meaning that you could basically measure how fast they're going. Now obviously the longer you let them fall, the more that velocity going in a direction starts to run out from air resistance. So you don't want to make this too high, because then air resistance is going to have more of an effect before they actually hit the ground. And you certainly don't want to launch them with a trajectory. If they have any trajectory up, that means this velocity is higher than the velocity down, so they will in fact go further if they go up first. So if you give them any velocity in the upward direction, they will go further. But anyway, so there's only two components to it. So he's measuring the velocity as it goes through the gate, and then he's measuring how far it goes. All right, so he does a bunch of these over and over and over, you know, shoot the thing, shoot the thing, shoot the thing. Now the timing gate is always saying what I would argue, okay, and it's coming out pretty close to perfect, okay, instead of 1.8, it's pretty much 2.0, okay, so one object, or one mass, goes through the gate at, say, 30, and two masses go through the gate at 60, so it's a 2-to-1 ratio, and so he did it with the little nuts, and then he also shot some batteries, you know, some heavier masses, and he got exactly the same result, okay, which is, you know, two batteries twice as slow, so to speak, half the velocity, one battery, twice as much velocity. And only in one case, you got this, the weird outcome of the distances were off. So the distances were consistent, 2-to-1, okay, except in one experiment, it ended up being, 90-60 kind of a thing. So it ended up being close to the 1.4 number. Okay, which, again, I would just say happened because the heavier object ended up, he pushed it, if you push an object, it's a little bit thick. If you push a thick object at the base, it'll tend to churn and go up. Okay, so if you're below its center of gravity and you push something, you'll end up swing it in the upward direction. So he probably shot the heavier object up, and that's why it went too far. And that's why the twice as light object didn't look like it went as far, is because obviously, do it this way. If the heavy object goes up, and this object has to go this way, obviously this one's going to look like it's going faster than it was because it went up first. So it should have been here, but it ended up here because its trajectory wasn't the same, okay? Had an advantage in terms of it was pointed up a little. That would be a reasonable explanation, but I mean, pretty conclusive in the sense that the timing gate is saying it, whether Stephen Brozo likes it or not, it's saying it pretty loudly that the velocities are 2-to-1. That's perfectly consistent with levers being energy conversion devices, not free energy devices. And it's perfectly consistent with the other experiments that are just irrefutable. I mean, the lever is an irrefutable argument. I mean, you can't deny it's only gravity that the energy is being stored in. It oscillates. It only oscillates because the energy is trapped in the system. Okay? The energy has to be the same on both sides. One side creates the energy for the other side's motion. And it's just silly to think of it any other way. The energy has to go this way, and then the energy has to go back this way, and the energy has to go this way. There's no way there could be twice as much energy going this way, and then only half the energy goes back that way. That won't oscillate. So lots of good evidence. So we'll play the Brozo video in this context. So it is funny, he doesn't realize that there's two DeSpar videos, and the first one is even more conclusive in the sense that it proves both the distance argument, how far the things went, and the velocity argument. And he's only complaining about the one video, which is funny, because the other video is even more of a proof of me being right. All right, so we should be able to find this without too much trouble. Take a little pause. Yeah! Yeah, ooh, startling. Anyway, so we'll play some of this. I'm going to speed it up a little bit. But, I mean, just the argument he's making is just so stupid. It's such a tiny little point he's making. He's doing it so badly. It's just, again, so the accusation is his physics is broken. Well, this is exactly why it's broken. It's because of this kind of desperation. I mean, a desperately arrogant argument in the face of a complete lack of good evidence.
The following comments aren't meant as a criticism of Dispar. They're just trying to help him along, trying to work.
Right, so he's being patronizing. I'm not criticizing, I'm just being a patronizing, obnoxious asshole telling you your experiment sucks because mine are really good. I mean, it's just so bad, so stupid, especially in the context of how bad his experiment is.
Okay, what's really going on, because he's trying his best.
What's really going on, like he has any kind of clue.
He's learning what works and what doesn't work. So I just wanted to make sure that nobody got the wrong idea.
Right. So he keeps thinking he's correcting to prevent people from getting a wrong idea, and here he is selling an insanely stupid wrong idea. A 350-year-old religion that he's trying to propagandize for with really crap as propaganda. It's not even Shroud of Turin. It's like Shoe of Jeebus. You know, he really is just holding up Jesus' shoe.
Some errors that are creeping into his experiments.
He says errors when, well, you know, his technology is a little better and his results are more consistent than yours, frankly. And it's just hilarious. You know, he's pointing the finger. And this is the same guy who complains when anybody points a finger at his experiments and says, well, you didn't consider this, and you didn't do that right, and you didn't do this right. He doesn't want to hear any of that.
The methodology. Thank you. I really appreciate the work that he's trying to do.
Oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So, again, more just blow smoke when you're, you know, just so arrogant and so obnoxious.
Hello. I've been in some serious doubt about the validity of the measurements that Dispar was getting from his new photo gate. The way he's using it, because it's implying that to make something go twice as fast, all you need to do is halve the mass.
Yes, every run, he got the same outcome. So far, the photo gate has worked exactly that way and hasn't worked any other way. So he has no evidence of the photo gate not getting that result. So that is the truth. So far, no matter what he throws through it, no matter what, he's used two different spring devices. Both spring devices created the correct velocities. That is the 2-to-1 ratio in velocity. And then when he threw a heavier object, it also did the same thing. So yes, he's gotten a pretty consistent outcome, actually.
Well, you could keep on doing that until something got ridiculously fast, couldn't you? You know.
So he says you can keep doing that until something got ridiculously fast. Yeah, that's the whole point. If I could make a lever that weighed nothing, okay, so I can make it out of carbon fiber or whatever they call that, graphene or something. That was only 2 molecules thick and it didn't matter. The very fact is that, yes, I could theoretically do the bullet thing. I could make my lever long enough and I could put a weight on one side, and I could actually have the bullet fly off at 1,000 miles an hour off the other side. It's just a fact that that's exactly what you're arguing for. You think the bullet has more energy, even though the fact is, by mass to velocity ratio, that is, the gun has 1,000 times more atoms. So 1,000 times more atoms going 1,000 times slower. So it literally is as simple as me having a bag of $1,000 bills or me having a bag, okay, of 100 $10 bills and saying, you know, is there a difference between those two bags, right? 100 $10 bills, 10 times 100,000, yes. No, there's no difference. One of them doesn't have more energy. One of them doesn't have more money. So a $1,000 bill, okay, isn't more money than 1,000 singles. And it's clearly that's what the gun and the bullet are doing. The gun has 1,000 single dollar bills. The bullet has one $1,000 bill.
I think there's a flaw in his methodology, using hexagons and the placements of the stuff on the lever and so on and so forth.
So all of that, if it had any effect, the effect is minor. So that's the a little bit of a difference, right? So one of them goes through and it's 32, and another one goes through and it's 35, another one goes through and it's 26. Yeah, because the thing could have gone through the long way or the short way. So yeah, it'd be better if he had perfectly symmetrical objects. But the fact is, it's not going to change the fact that in the experiment, the heavy object is clearly twice as, it's the irregularities are always twice as much.
So I wanted to go back to my original ball launching
thing. So this is amazing, because he's going back to something so bad and so useless that it's like, it proves the opposite case. It's that bad.
Which is really Gary's design, so I thank him for that. I don't have to thank Gary, but on that occasion I must. Because that result...
There's nothing amazing about the design. It's a rubber band with a quick release. Yeah.
But that gave me absolutely excellent results. Perfect every time.
Okay, so nowhere close to perfect. None of that happened. I mean, it's insane for him to use these words when he doesn't have that as evidence at all. Nothing even close to perfect.
Because this bar is... acknowledge that he's getting haphazard results.
And Dispar's results are perfect in the sense that the fact is that if you take the averages of the results, they come out perfect. If you take the worst result and then the worst result in the other extreme, it still works. It's still 50. It's still 2-to-1 ratio.
You know, the results change almost every time he does it. It lands somewhere different. Lands further, lands short, lands...
Not much worse than any of his Brozo's experiments in terms of there's always a range that they land within, and he's gotten wide ranges in his experiments. So again, this is more just an amazing hypocrisy for him to cite that as evidence, because he had exactly the same thing happen. There was always one or two places where things didn't go quite right, and you got aberrant result.
To the left, to the right. We can't really see what's going on in his experiment. He stood in front of the camera.
So again, another hilarious joke. You can't see anything going on in Brozo's experiments. You have no clue what the fuck he's doing. And he edits it all to pieces and shows you little tiny clips. I mean, amazing, again, hypocrisy for him to argue that somehow you can't see anything in Dispar's experiments, when at least you can see the experiment taking place and it's not all edited and cut to pieces. So again, just so stupid.
So all we saw with his back. So it lacks precision, plus it wasn't on a solid.
So again, it doesn't lack precision in the sense it's using a piece of technology, the timing gate, a timer, a sort of reliable stopwatch. And on its face, one could argue it's more reliable than your silly, crappy GoPro camera thingy. Okay, counting frames, because you're not smart enough to know the difference between constant frame rate and variable frame rates. And the fact is that your results are the ones that are easy to pick at as being flawed and deceptive.
Base and numerous other problems I've discussed on his thread. Here goes, I'll just show you some experiments I've done. Doing this, 120 frames per second. As accurately as I could, getting the camera as direct.
So we don't get to see any of that original footage at 120 frames per second, blah, 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 blah. Now that really takes place. And again, it can be doubtable whether it's anything called a real 120 frames per second or synthetic. You know, the camera companies all exaggerate. And so it's probably closer to a real 60 frames.
Above what I'm trying to focus on as I possibly could. And then counting the frames to check, is it going twice the speed or not? Isn't. Anyway, so this is the third.
So again, counting the frames, we've already demonstrated through repeated experiments, isn't very reliable. Isn't as reliable as we'd all like to thought originally, that this would be an easy way to do something. Because the fact is that it doesn't take much to get very unreliable, inconsistent slices. They're not really, this is image 10, this is image 20, this is image 30. They're really not... Okay, reliably in that order.
This part where we look at the 62 gram ball and then the 31 gram ball, exactly half, being released from the elastic and counting how long the acceleration period is.
Okay, so everybody's done all this crap. So again, I'll skip over this part because he's doing the acceleration in the rubber band. Who cares? You can't measure anything there because the velocity is constantly changing as it's being accelerated, so it's completely useless.
This first stage is just counting the acceleration period, okay?
This one is the...
So, complete waste of time. I'll let you see it, but I mean, it's a complete waste of time.
So, we've got 62 and 31 grand. One, two...
I mean, only an idiot would think there'd be some point in measuring the time of the acceleration, so we'll just skip past that crap.
...period when the ball is now free of the... The ball is now free of the elastic band. So we measure now from the back of the ball. The image gets a little bit blurred, so if we measure...
So he's conceding that these frame rate videos are blurred, which means the images have more than one image of the ball in them, which isn't really very good, okay? Because you don't know where it actually is. Is the ball where the first image is of the blur, or is the ball actually where the last image is? So again, just...
the back of the ball each time, then we're at least getting an honest result.
And so he's arguing that this is much better than the electronic timing gate that, you know, Despard paid $250 for.
So I'm counting from there to the first easily measurable point, which is the 100...
or 300, whatever it was.
...millimeter line. So I count how many frames that takes for each of the balls. Okay? And again, we observe that it's not going twice the speed.
No, we do observe that it actually is. Okay? So, yeah.
Well, hopefully you can see I'm merging the small ball picture with the large ball picture.
Yes, so we can see that. Yes, very nice. Blurry and blurrier.
So we're going with that. Okay. So you should be able to see both balls really now. Okay, so here we go. My apologies for some of the edits in there.
So this is amazing. So he's double editing. So he's editing the video, and then he's editing the video that he edited, the video of the edit. Yeah.
Yes, I don't know what's gone wrong, but my editing thing keeps chopping off more than it was supposed to. So you'll hear half a word, or you'll miss me counting one of the steps.
Oh,
sorry, it's just the way it's gone. It's too late to rectify it. Rubbish software, FreeMake. So the small ball has just left the start line.
So again, he's always trying to cut it, you know, into these little milliseconds, and you're just saying, well, why all this? Why? You don't think we can have the 5 seconds of extra time in the frame? Yeah.
Hey. Yes.
So anyway, all right. So
then we can say the small ball is there. Okay.
So this is his precise image. This is 120 frames per second or something, or whatever he says it is. Obviously not a great image. Okay. So the frames aren't of some, oh yeah, I can see exactly where the ball is. See, this little line is the glare off the ball. So obviously the ball is moving, and that entire amount of glare is actually the movement of the ball in the image. So it's a static image of a moving object, and there is no, oh, it's in the center, oh, it's at this end, oh, it's that end. You don't know for sure where it actually is in this frame.
And the large ball appears to be about there. Okay.
Appears to be.
See? Rolling both. So now.
So obviously, yes, one of them's going twice as fast. Okay. So the light ball's ahead of the fat one, right? And you're going to see where they end up, okay, after 1 unit of time. You're going to see that one of them is twice as far as the other one. It's going to be visually obvious that one of them is going very close to twice as fast as the other one, because it's twice as far in the same amount of time. I mean, it's an amazing... But he's going to tell us, no, that's not the truth. Don't pay any attention to where they are. Listen to me, I'm telling you, they aren't where they are. Okay, that didn't happen. The tortoise didn't go half as slow as the rabbit.
Let's count how many clicks it takes for the small ball to pass the 100 line. That's the 100 line, okay?
Whatever.
Two.
So you can see it happening right here. Obviously, now the small one's getting further and further away from the big one. It's moving twice as fast. When it's at this line, this one's barely gotten to the halfway point, the half distance. It's barely gotten to the half distance. This one is way ahead.
Three, four,
five. There it is, right there. It's telling you overtly, this one is twice as far ahead of this one. Twice as far. It's gone twice as far. This is the same amount of time. This image is saying this is the same amount of time. They've had the same amount of time to travel. One of them is clearly twice the distance ahead of the other one. It obviously is going twice as fast. And this idiot is going to tell us this is hard, great, fantastic evidence. Look how great my experiment is. It completely proves 1.4. 1.4, understand, 1.4 is here. Okay, it's here. Right? It isn't here. This can't be 1.4. This can't be just 0.4 faster. 0.4 faster can't be twice as far. So it's clearly evidence against his argument. I mean, it's clearly evidence supporting the 2-to-1 ratio. 2-to-1. It's clear evidence pointing right at it, saying, yes, 2-to-1. And this moron is sitting here telling, arrogantly saying, I want to protect people from misinformation. I want to stop people from misunderstanding. I can't believe it, right? And so this is human. This is what humans are capable of. This kind of insane fanaticism. And why? Merely because he just can't accept that I'm right. Okay. And because mass psychology, right? He'll be convinced because the mob says so. The mob must be right. The mob must be right.
5, 6. Okay, so it took 6 clicks. To pass the 100 line. I'm circling around the blurred image. I know it ends up looking elliptical, but.
Yeah, I know it is. Yeah, that's right. It's looking that way because you're not really looking at the object. You're looking at a synthetic bit of pixel manipulation inside of your camera.
Just help people with poor eyesight. And that's the big ball behind it. 6 clicks to get to there, okay? Now you can be forgiven for thinking, oh, it looks like it's going twice the speed of the big ball.
Yeah, yes. And so how's he gonna explain that away? Let's hear. This will be really interesting. How the hell is he going to explain the fact that, yes, it looks like it's gone exactly twice the distance in the same amount of time?
But wait a moment. Hang on a sec.
Oh.
So this is where the big ball has passed.
He's not going to do anything. Oh, okay.
The art line. Okay. So let's count how long that takes to pass the 100 millimeter mark.
So this one's already showing it has twice the velocity. It's already moved twice the distance. it's already obvious and demonstrated.
So let's remember the other one took 6 clicks. 1, 2, 3.
So 4. You can see they move different amounts of space in one of his clicks. So obviously they're not changing their speed. So obviously this image is a ghost. And the actual image maybe should be here or someplace else, but it's not exactly correct. So you could argue that that is quite apparent also, that these are variable frames. They are not constant frames.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
So, and through the whole course of that travel, again, the small one is twice the distance, and it'll get more and more distance as this kept going, just because the big one's going to start rolling. It's going to start losing a lot of energy a lot quicker than the little one will be. But anyway, quite clearly, the rabbit was twice as far down the track.
Just about passing it. Well, just still over the line.
So he has only 6 units to work with here, right? We're talking about just 6/10 of an inch kind of thing, and to do his comparison. So he's going to say 6 and 9. Well, how close is that to 5 and 10, right? So that's your difference, right? 6 and 9, he's right. 5 and 10, I'm right. I mean, that's how bullshit this experiment is. 1 click difference. Okay, one way or the other way, and you get completely different answers to the question.
All took 9 frames to pass 100.
So let's say that was 10.
So the small ball took 6 frames, and the large ball took.
Right, so we just then we make the 6 a 5. Then you have 5 and 10. Perfect.
8.5,
that's how little the error has
to cover
be.
The same ground to the 100 millimeter line. Now that's not a 2-to-1 ratio at all, is it? That's 8.5 compared to 6. You work it out.
So this is what he's presenting as his pristine, perfect. It comes out perfect. This is his best argument. So his best argument for velocity, and he can't even do the calculation where you just divide the number. You divide the 10 into the 6. I mean, it's not that difficult to do. Well, you divide the 6 into the 10. I mean, the 6 into the 9 to get your answer. I mean, he won't even do that in the video. So he's saying this is his big proof, debunking. He's going to correct all the misinformation, and this horrible pile of steaming crap is what he presents as showing, oh, look how great this evidence is, and this really proves it. It's so much better than that timing gate thing.
But it's not 2-to-1 ratio, is it? If the small one did it in 6, then the large ball should have taken 12, shouldn't it, if they were going at 2-to-1 ratio speeds. If Dispar's measurements were right, and the small ball was going twice the speed, then having measured it taking 6 frames to cover that distance, the large ball should have taken...
So, and again, and yeah, your pitcher shouldn't have had the small ball twice as far down the track. If it was going 0.4 faster, that's all, just 0.4 faster, it shouldn't have been twice as far down the track. That doesn't make any sense, idiot.
Twice that. It should have taken 12 frames.
So he's just going to keep saying the same thing over and over. And this is how he keeps everybody from, you know, being fooled by charlatans and idiots.
Distance, but it didn't. Took about 8.5. I said 9. You see what I mean? Not getting accurate results from...
I said 9, but I didn't mean 9. I mean 8.5.
The methodology. Don't want anybody to get the wrong idea, because it's really hard to remove a wrong idea once it gets in someone's head.
Apparently. 350 years of wrong idea. And, you know, completely irrational wrong idea, in the sense it's a free energy formula 350 years ago, and it still is. And you still won't account for any of that, those facts. You won't explain how the lever works. Because you can't. That's why you won't. So let's just understand, he won't explain how a lever works because he can't. Because there's no way to make up some sort of shit about how there's more energy on one side of it than the other side.
Just into it. Well, it's really hard to remove a wrong idea once it's in someone's head.
So he says the same thing all over again. He just, I don't know what this habit of his is. So he says that's being a non-propagandist. Propagandists never keep repeating the same shit over and over again. Now, that's not a technique the propagandists use.
Really hard. That's why we're in this mess in the first place. Because Gary believed some wrong ideas from the start.
Because Gary noticed that you had no evidence for your wrong ideas, your silly ideas, your free energy notions. That 5-ton trains going 5 miles an hour, somebody actually proved somewhere that they have twice as much energy as 10-ton trains going 5 miles an hour. And you have no such evidence.
And it's become increasingly hard to remove those ideas because he just keeps doubling down on them. And so do his friends. They all back one another up. The honest truth is, nobody properly knows how these things work. We all just do our best.
Well, you just spouted it. Like, you do know properly, and you're going to correct everybody with your completely crappy evidence. I mean, it couldn't be... I mean, the level of crappiness is, it's just so low, and you're just like saying, how can he hold this up and say this is as good as? I mean, I guess he really thinks his crappy little clay experiments are better than the Mythbuster experiment. Yeah. Maybe he's going to make that argument. I mean, we haven't heard his argument. You know, what his excuse is for their results. Why do their results show exactly the opposite of what your results showed? Exactly the opposite. And they showed it within a tiny margin of error.
It's to model through. And we are willing to admit when we're wrong.
No, you're not. You're just following such comments, a lie. I mean, what a lie. He's willing to admit anything. Oh, fuck. What a liar. All right. So I don't know if there's anything in here that'll be worth reading. Sorry for the poor edit, software issues, rushed video, testing. So he had to rush this out to stop anybody from being confused by Dispar's videos that didn't really say anything too overtly. He just showed what the results were. Dispar's odd test results. So, yeah. Half mass velocity issue checked. I get different results. So he didn't do some new experiment to check anything. He didn't do a better experiment. Nothing. Okay. I will try to upload a better version of the same crap. So it'll have the same crappy video in it, and he'll just do a better version of the same crap. when I'm through with today's other more urgent tasks. Yes, he has to go, you know, hand crank the breast milk, you know, sucker or something. You know, for the welfare horse or something. Anyway, who knows what he's doing. Oh, 18 comments. That's just hilarious. I won't bother with that, but we'll see. Oh, look at that, Despar. Thanks for doing these. Oh, isn't that just so special? Yes, as long as I'm getting different results each time, I'm clearly doing something wrong. Well, you didn't really get different results going through the timing gate, did you? I don't think you have any different results yet from the timing gate. I have to admit that I was a little impatient to try out the experiments while not giving it much thought. So anyways, no, obviously so far, there's not much you can say about the timing gate. It does appear to work. Yeah, okay. But anyway, look at all this crap. So this ought to be pretty funny. All right, so I'll read some of that on my time and see if there's something worth sharing with you, but there won't be anything reasonable as an argument. Because there's nothing reasonable about their premise. I mean, again, they think that, you know, I make something twice as light, I can only throw it 0.4 faster. 0.4, that's it. Oh, that's all I can get, 0.4. They really don't think that 60 pounds weighs twice as much as 30 pounds, and it takes you twice as much energy to lift the 60 pounds. They don't get that. I mean, it's just so stupid. I mean, this argument really shouldn't even have to be taken. Like I said, levers have been around thousands of years, and these people actually think there's some reason for anyone to believe they're free energy devices. Because if KE is correct, if 1/2 mv squared is correct, a lever is a free energy device. It's exactly how it functions. It does exactly what we all know it does, which is it converts the momentum. If I convert the momentum from, you know, 5 to 10, you know, okay, the 5-ton train going 10 miles an hour, and I convert the momentum into 10 and 5, the 10-ton train going 5 miles an hour, they think the 5-ton train has twice as much energy, even though we know the lever does the conversion. Every day, levers do that. Every single day, levers convert 10 fives into 5 tens. Every day. And here they are doing this horrid, disgusting, non-evidenced counter-argument. This propagandizing for a faith-based religious notion. Yeah, anyway. And people wonder, well, what are you saying? There's a conspiracy? I guess there is. And the conspiracy is stupid. Dishonest. I mean, how dishonest do you really have to be? I mean, really, for him to think he just proved anything, or his results were so much better, or his experiment was better. I mean, what a joke. A tragic, horrid joke. Especially when you can see that the other ball is twice as far down the track. Somehow it got twice as far down the track without going twice as fast. Too stupid. It's just too stupid. And there's no excuse for stupidity. This out of control. No excuses at all. All right, anyway. Oh, I just hate this planet. It's so tragic that there's just so many people of such low character on this planet. Eek. Lying scum. Yeesh. Yeesh. Yeesh.